Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Michael Colgan as my special expert guest. Dr. Colgan is an internationally renowned research scientist and is acknowledged as one of the foremost experts on the inhibition of aging. He lectures worldwide and is the author of many excellent books. From 1971 to 1980, Dr. Colgan was a senior member of the science faculty of the University of Auckland, where he taught in human sciences and in the medical school and conducted research on aging and physical performance. Dr. Colgan is the founder and chairman of the Colgan Institute. The Institute is a consulting, educational, and research facility concerned with the effects of nutrition, exercise, and environmental influences on athletic performance, the prevention of degenerative disease, and the prevention of degeneration of the brain. In 2011, Dr. Colgan was pleased to partner with Isogenics International to join with their scientific research team to find nutritional products that would help slow aging. Along with the Isogenics team headed by Dr. Sook Cho, Dr. Colgan has developed the Isogenics Brain Support System, which was launched in August 2012. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Corey. It's great to be on it.
So we haven't had a conversation for a while, and I'd love to hear what you're up to. I know that you're very busy and you're always on the cutting edge, so perhaps you could give us some insight about some of the latest projects that you're working on.
Oh, sure. I joined the Isogenics Advisory Board, and they put several $1 million towards my brain support system, towards the research. That's been a focus of attention for some time, and we're continuing with it. You know, there are at least 10 classes of events that we know that are well characterized in the scientific literature that cause aging. And with the team in Isogenics, we're addressing 5 of them. And then Dr. Bill Andrews and his team are addressing another one, which is a very important one. So we're probably, in terms of anything that you can get commercially, we're probably ahead of the game by about 2-3 years.
That's absolutely fantastic. I have been watching some YouTubes on Dr. Bill Andrews, and because I've been researching telomeric DNA, and what an exciting area of research there is in this field. You know, like, you're an expert on anti-aging, and since I have connected with you, it's been a while. I've joined forces, at least from a study point of view, with the American Academy of Anti-Aging, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, and personalized medicine research. So is there some good news today regarding some of the technology or the efforts that you've discovered regarding what we can do to preserve our form and function as we age?
Well, there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is that the bulk of medical science is still going in the direction of 20th century medicine. And that is really inventing a better and better buggy whip. Molecular medicine really started in early 2000s, and pretty much everything before that we can throw away. Now, I know, of course, that certain things are very important for certain people, like, for instance, receiving a kidney transplant or a liver transplant or getting a serious wound stitched up and that sort of thing. They're still, obviously, we continue to do those things. But that form of medicine is so crude, it beggars description when you look at it from the point of view of molecular medicine of the 21st century. In this century, probably during our lifetimes, Corey, we will be able to grow new kidneys, new livers, new eyes, a lot of new things, because we understand the molecular system. In fact, it's already being done, and I could spend a lot of time just talking about that. But it's the same with aging. Up till the turn of the century, there were a large number of people who were looking at the classical chemical view of aging, and that is no longer current. So I would say 90% of everything that's out there now for sale has been built on the classical view of chemistry. And the classical view of chemistry we know now is so crude that we really shouldn't be bothered with it anymore.
So once again, you're on the right path. And my research, Michael, and I'm sure you would agree, still strongly recommends that all of us maintain our physical form through exercise, through correct exercise, through training and working out consistently. And also with the whole food nutrition, a genomically correct diet so that all those locks and keys fit in. What about your own personal life? You're into the seventh decade now. What are you doing yourself to maintain the fabric of your health and the existence of your mind? Are these things valid? Are they still valid?
Well, of course. We can, you know, some of the things that we're developing now turn on the right genes and do it in the right way. And as you know, Corey, I know 2006 I had a pretty bad accident, and then I had a lot of surgery, and it took me about 3 years or so to recover. And I've been applying the modern science that we have now to myself, and I have to say it's miraculous. It's totally miraculous. I'm in better physical shape now than I was when I was 45.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, it's ridiculous to say this, but at age 74, I can do more push-ups than I did when I was 45. Yeah, it's pretty funny, isn't it?
That's awesome.
It's ludicrous. Ludicrous. Every day when I get up and I think this has got to be a fantasy, but it isn't.
So what about people your age? Last night, Tracy and I watched a movie starring William Hurt, and it's called Late Bloomers, and it's about people getting into their 60s. My take on this, Michael, is that most people, they don't really do anything to look after themselves. They just have this assumption that their bodies just stay in the same form their entire life until they die. So what is it about people today and their lack of knowledge, their lack of insight regarding their own physical bodies and their own physical health?
Well, we are bombarded with misinformation, and it's misinformation not only from commercial sources, but from the government, and people believe it. I'll give you one example. About 15 years ago, the Canadian government mandated labeling on foods. Then the commercial sector, of course, immediately hired a whole lot of lawyers and other people so they could write labels that got around the regulations. And the labeling of foods now is such that, and it doesn't matter where you go, you can go to Whole Foods or anywhere you like, doesn't matter. If you believe what you see on the label, then you deserve what you get. And that's a sad thing. So because there were so many people like me objecting to the government saying, you've got to do something about this. I mean, the labeling is ridiculous. The labeling is all false. They have now, just now, in 2013, I think a couple of months ago, they introduced the new labeling initiative. The government introduced this labeling initiative. You can look it up. Food Labeling Initiative, it's called. They have expressly refused to allow any input from nutrition or health professionals. Think about that.
So our food supply, it's really been hijacked, and it really comes down once again to our own individual attempts to do the best we can and to read books like what you write and other authors. And then speaking of that, you've written a couple of great books lately. Tracy and I have read them both, and a lot of our CSNA students have read them and love them and are teaching the principles. But maybe we can talk about the anti-inflammatory athlete, which was just wonderful because of how you provide insight regarding how the body gets inflamed from exercise and how dietary choices really influence our recovery. Maybe you could talk about some of the principles or ideas in that book for us.
Sure, if you'd like me to. It's a relatively simple book. It's written at the level that anybody can understand. The major problem that I have, and every week I have pretty high-level athletes contacting me, every week. I can only take on a few of them, and I talk to them, and I tell them about the environment. I tell them about the American Lung Association reports for 2011 and 2012 showing that the American air, and the Canadian reports are very similar, showing that American air is now dirtier than it's ever been in history. So if you're an athlete and you breathe 12 times a year of the average sedentary person, which they do, then you're going to get about 12 times toxins into your body. I sort of let that sink down to the athlete and allow them to reply to me. And if they say, oh, well, I don't care about that, then I said, well, I'm not going to take you on. That's it. Because every athlete we test shows massive number of toxins in their sweat, including mercury and lead and cadmium, pesticides, other contaminants. If you think that you're ever going to reach your potential as an athlete without carrying that toxic load, then I don't want to work with you. You know, we live in an incredibly toxic environment right now. But that's one reason I live on this island in Salt Spring. I grow all my own food. I farm my own cattle, my own sheep. I eat wild fish. And I follow essentially the principles that are in that book, and it's miraculous.
What are some of the good supplements that are proposed by you or have been verified by science that can help reduce inflammation when we need that type of support?
You know, there are chapters in the book. I won't go into the alkaline diet. People can look that up. But essentially, if you eat a diet high in allium foods, that is onions, garlic, those plants, they provide a large amount of the sulfur in the body. And the sulfur is, we're essentially composed of the dust of stars, and that's made primarily of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. That actually makes up 96.5% of the whole of the human body. After that comes calcium, about 1%, and phosphorus, which is about 1%, potassium, which is about 4.4%, and then sulfur, 0.3%. And without the nine things, the other one is magnesium, without those things in proper order and proper amounts, forget the rest of it. You can eat all the supplements you like, but if you don't get the basic composition of the body right, forget it. One of the best sources of sulfur is the allium plants, because they take it up from the soil. If you grow your alliums on NPK fertilizers, they don't take it up because it isn't in the soil anymore. But if you buy organically grown, and that's your best shot, I'm not saying it's perfect, best shot for onions, garlic, shallots, leeks, scallions, chives, they're the major sources of the mineral sulfur. Now, you can take it as a supplement using methyl sulfonyl methane, and we do that every day too, because your body uses about 2,000 milligrams a day, and that's hard to get, very hard to get. So that's one thing.
Wonderful. Right. Now, you've been on the road quite a bit lately. I watched some of your lectures on the internet, which are wonderful and great insight, as always. I'm just thinking, I know that you and I have lectured together, and every time you get out there, something happens or you have some kind of experience that really sticks in your mind, something that's really incredible or wonderful, or you met someone that really impressed you. Can you give us a bit of a story, maybe an account of something that you've discovered on one of your trips that would be of interest to us on this topic?
I was just talking a little bit ago about how we are composed of the dust of stars, and I gave you the composition of the human body. Well, now, very, very few of the scientists who go into nutritional science understand this. I know you do, Corey, but a lot of people don't understand that that's what we're made of. And then if you're going to design anything to help it, you have to take that into account first. And if you don't understand that, it's useless. You're just, you know, shooting blanks. And that's unfortunately the trouble with most nutritional supplements. They're shooting blanks. And so when I went, one of the big reasons that I joined the Isogenic Scientist Advisory Board is I went to meet their chief formulator, John Anderson. And I sat in John Anderson's lab in Arizona, talked for 3 hours. We did not say one word about nutrition. We talked about stars. We talked about the mathematics of the universe, because that's us. We are designed to the mathematics of the universe. And we talked about the pulverizing of asteroids to find out exactly the proportions of things we're made of, because we are made of asteroids. We are made of dust that came from the stars. And I was so impressed to find that John understood this. Not only did he understand it, he had in his lab the equipment for pulverizing asteroids and analyzing their content. And he had on shelf dozens of asteroids. Now, asteroid, if you go on onto the internet, you can buy asteroids. It costs approximately $1,000 a gram. It's much, much more expensive than gold. And John Anderson pulverized the asteroids to find out what we are made of. That is science.
That is incredible. I mean, how simplistic also. It just makes perfect sense. So what you're saying is that a lot of conventional scientists, they don't not only recognize this as important, but they don't think in those terms. And so that's probably one of the reasons why you are affiliated with Isagenix, because they have the same mindset and they're obviously allowing you to expand in your direction the way that you are designed to. And that must be very exciting for you.
It is very exciting. In fact, I'm going down there for the Scientific Advisory Board meeting next week. And it's pretty cutting edge. The stuff that actually happens is not the stuff that you can talk about in marketing and out to the public. In fact, I try to do that sometimes to my detriment in some of my lectures because people can't understand it, so I've stopped doing it now. But we are pretty much on the cutting edge. We're not the only ones. Of course, there are many, many scientists that have the same view. But commercially, the view of nutrition and the view of medicine, both in the United States and in Canada, is the way it was viewed 50 years ago. They're 50 years out of date.
Right, agreed. So maybe you can tell us something about your Isagenix brain support system. That sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, you know, Corey, that I've been working on this since probably the turn of the century, since 2000. And we had analyzed approximately 10,000 controlled trials throughout the world. You know, I'd love to say it's my work, but it isn't. It's the work of hundreds and hundreds of scientists throughout the world. We analyzed all the controlled trials, and from that, we got 105 substances that are part of nature, because, you know, my exact, nature made all the locks and holds all the keys, all the keys. All the synthetic drugs that are not part of nature that were invented in the 20th century, that's like a byway in history that's going to be forgotten, because nature made all the logs, and now we've got the molecular chemistry to do it. I'll just give you one example. It's not that medical science doesn't know this. In fact, I had growing in my garden a little periwinkle called the Madagascar periwinkle. It's sort of got a nickname called Vinca. Vinca was studied from the 1960s. It took maybe 1,000 scientists 30 to 40 years to produce the best cancer drugs we have for breast cancer from the Vinca. That's how difficult the molecular science is. But now vinblastine, vincristine, and other extracts of the little Madagascar periwinkle are the most effective cancer drugs. So if you could do that with nature, then you could do anything with nature. About 40% of all of the drugs that we have now come from nature. The other 60% are an unfortunate residue of historical mistakes of the 20th century. They would pass by. One of the reasons that we did not do the botanical extractions before is we didn't have the chemistry to do it. Now we do have the chemistry. Doesn't make it much easier, I can tell you. I've been working on it for years. But what we did was we got about 105 substances that have been shown in controlled trials to have effects on the brain, positive effects. Then we went through all of those that might have an allergenic effect, and all those that might have a sensitivity problem, all those that might have a toxicity problem if somebody decided to take half the bottle at once. And we came down to 15 substances, 15. And then we had to go through the whole supply thing, literally travel around the world and find a source of pure supplies of these things. And that was very difficult. And then we had to make contracts with these people who grew the plants so that we had a supply in the future. And then we had to do the extractions to see that the extractions worked. And finally, we came down to 9 substances where we could fulfill all these criteria, and we put them together and we made the brain support supplement. And if there's anything out there that's even close, even, within 2-3 years, I'd love to hear about it. But the brain support is probably the best brain supplement that I know, and it's certainly the best one commercially out there.
So what form is it in, and what is the suggestion regarding how much of what you take?
It comes in a capsule. They're very powerful botanical extractions, so what you read on the label has very little to do with what's in it. Now, that's something that people don't understand. What you read on labels has very little to do with what is in the bottle. That pertains to all the foods, all the supplements, everything you buy. There is a huge difference between a properly extracted botanical of, say, turmeric than most of the supplements out there. I picked turmeric because somebody asked me the other day, our local health food store sells turmeric in a bin, a very bright yellow, I'm sure you know it, the herb. They sell it in a bin, a plastic bin. So you open the lid, you stick a shovel into it, and you put it into a bag.
Right.
That is an example of the bastardization of our food, because every bit of that turmeric is oxidized. It is useless. You can say it's X percent turmeric, but it's X percent oxidized turmeric. As soon as oxygen gets to it, it's done. So you have to consider that unless your extractions are done under conditions of no oxygen, no heat, no light, then you might as well forget it. There's no requirement that people do that. I mean, I just think a grocery store, a health food store, can sell it in a bin. So it's open to the public. In fact, when you open the bin and breathe in it, you get a huge number of bacteria, viruses, molds, yeasts, all that come from your breath. I can't understand why people can sell that, but that's the way our food system is.
Right. Well, that's certainly in line with what science would teach. I know that for sure. I know it from you, and I've also known it from my own research. It applies to all foods, and air, food, light, oxygen, these are all enemies of whole natural food. Now, we just read your book, Quiet Mind, and what a great read that was. And it was a bit of a departure from the science of nutrition. It was more about developing an attitude, because all this exercise and nutrition doesn't amount to much if you don't have the right attitude and if you don't have a inner solace or a solemnity that one can find. And I think that you're trying to reach out to people and into their minds and say, look, you've got to have this type of attitude that is able to take on the stress and cope with reality, maybe what you're doing yourself. But what kind of feedback have you gotten from people that have been reading The Quiet Mind?
I've had really, really tremendous feedback, including, I should explain that the Quiet Mind book is something I developed for athletes to remove negative emotions from their life, because negative emotions adversely affect performance. And I even found that some coaches goad their athletes to become angry because they think that they'll therefore perform better. And it's absolutely and completely wrong. All of the world champions that I've worked with are totally calm people. Nothing upsets them. Nothing. And so I set out to find out how you can do that in your own life, how people can do it. I was surprised to find that the World Health Organization believes that stress, that is psychological stress from negative emotion, is the second biggest cause of disability in the United States. And that's a huge, huge thing, because our DNA was developed as hunter-gatherers who lived in a dangerous place, but in a relatively empty place. And fear and anger were two emotions that enabled us to save our lives. And those people who were best at expressing fear and anger were the ones who became our ancestors. And so we have those things built into us. But today, in our society, there are very, very few occasions when fear or anger are necessary. Now, people believe that they're necessary because they're automatic triggers that are in the brain that trigger these emotions. And so they use them. People will get angry just because of an example. The other day, I was in the coffee bar and somebody dropped their coffee, knocked it over. Then it went over, you know, papers and things like that. And they immediately got stinking angry, not only at the coffee, at their own stupidity, but at people around them, grumbling and moaning. And it reminds me of one of the things I put in the book, and it's from Buddha. It says, "You may not be punished for your anger, but you will be punished by it." And that's true. Anger is a very, very destructive emotion for your own brain. And if you can eliminate it from your life, then it adds so much to your life. You know, the one of the messages of the book is the basic purpose of life is joy. And so to eliminate anger is a tremendous thing. And that's why I developed the system that's in the book to try and help people to do that. And then the other great big emotion that leads to all the negative consequences like melancholy and anxiety and dread and is fear. And yet the majority of people do not realize that fear does not exist in any object or any situation. It's a construction you make in your own mind. So anytime you feel afraid, you have frightened yourself. It's so obvious, but people don't accept it. And so I've developed a system to try and help them get over that.
Yeah, it's a great system, too, and incredibly important. And are you suggesting, in reading your book, you know, you mentioned different theistic belief systems. And, of course,
yes.
As a scientist, there are many scientists. In fact, the majority of them are atheists, and they are pursuing sort of an evidence-based path in life, and their position is we don't need to believe in anything unless we can validate it. So what I got from what you were saying in the book was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but whatever it is you can find within yourself to pacify this aggression in yourself, it's worth doing. And so you brought out pieces of classical poetry and verses and even from the Bible, and you use those. So are you saying that all this information can be used to the betterment and that we can still pursue science and have a construct of reality that is going to bring us closer to the truth without causing a lot of negative thinking?
I believe so. We have, because of our technological advances, which really are not that much. I mean, the latest cell phone is like a matchstick compared to the human brain. But because of our technological advances, we've become very measurement-based. Now, measurement-based and atheistic or whatever other belief system you have is just as much a belief system. Somehow, scientists seem to think that because you can measure it, because you can express it in numbers, your knowledge is of a different kind. That is not true. Your knowledge is exactly the same kind. Everything we know, everything in our culture, all of the theistic systems, all of the technological advancements, all of the belief systems, we thought up ourselves. All of our culture, we thought up with the human brain from a planet that was just sticks and rocks.
So take it at that. Oh, that's great. Enjoy talking with you so much, Michael. And thank you so much for making the time. You're very busy, and it means a lot to me. And I know it means a lot to our students, many of whom reach out to me as a consequence of having read your books and seeing my name in some of those books. And so it's very much appreciated. And we'll do the best we can, of course, from our end, always to send people your way to the Institute. And I see you've got a new website, drmichaelcolgan.com.
Yes, I have. Yeah, that's right. I think we have somewhere in the region of 40 different sites and webs and blogs and things. But yes, that is a fairly new one, yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's drmichaelcolgan.com and, of course, colganinstitute.com.
Yes.
For everybody out there, please get to those sites. Yep.
Well, I think one of the most instant, Corey, is Michael Colgan's page on Facebook. That's updated day by day.
Talk about that, and they always love your amazing insight, and some of your short little mini paragraphs, etc., are quite insightful and stimulating. So that's wonderful. It's so important to have respectable authors that are credible and reliable, and you're certainly one of them. And I've been reading a lot of Plato and Aristotle lately, studying their works, and a lot of what they taught way back then, 2,300 years ago, is so true. And Aristotle, his gym, or the Lyceum, was in a gym. So he was actually a gym rat. I just love that fact. In the morning, he would intellectualize, he would philosophize, and then he would say, okay, everybody, get down and give me 20, and let's get in shape. So that's exactly what you've always said, too, that the mind and the body were equal, that they required devotion and work. There's got to be a strong work ethic. Let's sweat and have some fun doing it. And you're right. In doing that, I think that's where you find the joy of living and accepting what is. So, Michael, thanks so much for contributing. Our time is gone, and maybe, as always, I'm going to ask you to leave us with a simple thought that we can digest and think about after we finish listening to you today.
The simple thought, life is hilarious. That's the way you should feel.
Dr. Michael Colgan has been my guest today on SNU. He's an internationally renowned research scientist. He's partnered with Isagenix International. He's got some great products, formulates products. Please read all of his books. They're absolutely essential. Michael, thank you very much for your contribution today.
Thank you, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.